Hello and welcome to Blogosphere, Serious Influence, the podcast all about the business side of the influencer industry. I'm Alice Audley and I'm the founder of Blogosphere. We run events, a magazine, an influencer network, and now a podcast too, which I'll be presenting. If there are any questions about the influencer industry that you want answered, please do drop me an email at alice@blogosphere.com. We're delighted to announce that Series 3 of Serious Influence has an exclusive sponsor, the music licensing platform, Licked. Licked provide commercial music from real labels for licensing into creators' content. It means that you can have great music on your videos without the fear of copyright claims or losing ad revenue. If you want to learn more about how you can legally use the music you love, be sure to check out Licked's website, licked.co. That's L-I-C-K-D.co. Today on Blogosphere Serious Influence, I'm joined by Grace Beverly, who is the founder of sustainable clothing brand, Tala. Grace started her career on Instagram with a fitness account and released a series of guides and later resistance bands that helped fund her through Oxford University. Grace has experience of working with brands and running her own brand and is passionate about creating a sustainable future.
I am Grace Beverly. I am from London, mainly. I've just moved back after uni and I guess probably best described as a entrepreneur slash social media influencer. It's a bit confusing. I'm in a weird transition stage where it's kind of all of the above and not really sure which area I'm categorising.
In the middle of a rebrand, but social media enabled at the beginning entrepreneur.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially in terms of things like demand, it obviously just multiplies the speed that you're able to start and run a business.
Yeah. So in terms of your first foray into the world of social media, are you Gen Z?
Yes, yeah. I think I am. I think I'm just, because just I'm 1997.
Okay. So I grew up, what, Facebook launched when you were like 8?
Yes, so I had Facebook from the age of, illegally, 12.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was that the first social media platform that you were on? And when did you first come across other social media stars or influencers and realise that was a thing?
I was actually on Bebo before Facebook.
You were on Bebo? How is that? I was on Bebo and I swear it only just launched.
With my 30 minutes of computer time a week, I really enjoyed a Bebo. I really liked their homepage. I don't think it would take off now, but
what was
I
your scared it. Of and happiest when on your Bebo account?
I don't think my memory goes that far back, unfortunately.
And closest friend. You had your top 6 friends, I think, on it.
Yeah, and your other half. Imagine that now. It's probably an absolute minefield. But in terms of my first experience with social media influencers or stars, I actually think even when, because I was using social media from probably about after Facebook, which was just used to speak to friends. It was more like a messaging IM service for how we used it. Beyond that, I'd say I kind of started using Instagram around 14, 15, just posting photos, kind of like a Facebook, but just for photos. And then...
Just so I don't have to work that out for my maths. What year are we in now then that you started doing Instagram?
Well,
that was in 2014, you're saying?
No, when I was 14.
Yeah.
So 2011. And it was kind of... I think mainly just used for my friends at that point. And then, but even when I started, I think in 2015, started my fitness Instagram to motivate myself. I don't think there were any social media stars who were seen to be self-made in any sense of the word, in terms of the fact that, just in terms of social media, it was more actresses and models and general celebrities, as it were the social media stars, rather than the idea of the blogger influencer that's grown now and being able to grow this platform without any traditional media.
Did you follow any people sort of on YouTube at that time as well?
I was actually a really late YouTube watcher. Mm-hmm. I don't think I even started watching YouTube until I started it myself and then decided that obviously I had to watch YouTube because I actually had no idea what YouTube was for. I originally started my YouTube because Instagram could only do 50-second workout videos and I wanted to do longer, so it would literally be me going, hi, I'm going to the gym, and then just filming a workout with music over it and then being like, bye, that was my workout, thank you. It's changed slightly since then.
So you started your Instagram, your fitness Instagram account, to motivate yourself and hold yourself accountable for exercising. Is that mm-hmm. right? And what was the growth on that like?
So actually it was pretty quick, but in a kind of completely different world to what it is now. So I think I completely started it as a diary. I didn't show my face until I had 10,000 followers. I didn't show my name. It was a completely random name. It wasn't Grace Fit as it was before. It was just completely random name that wasn't meant to be connected to me at all. And it was meant to be a private diary-based account about fitness and starting my fitness journey to keep me accountable. So rather than taking photos because they looked nice, it would be taking photos because I just did a workout and needed to keep myself accountable in that way. And yeah, I was just about 17 really trying to get into fitness and trying to, or actually 18 I think, and trying to establish that for myself. And my way of keeping myself accountable was putting it on the internet. I think actually probably within about 7 months I had 10,000 followers, something like that. So not super quick in terms of how some people grow now, but quite quick. I mean, yeah. I thought I'd hit the big time, so you know, I was very, very, very excited. But it wasn't kind of in the same way as a lot of people now with 10k followers are very engaged, they create amazing content. Mine was kind of, I went to the gym today.
Did you think about it when you hit 10,000 followers and realised that it was far beyond your friendship group that was following you, that it could be a career? Like, have you always been business-minded? Have you always been interested in that side of things?
I've always been business-minded, not necessarily in terms of social media. Always, I had an ultimate goal to have my own business or to run a business. But I thought kind of a lot longer term. I thought I'd have, you know, 5-6 years of experience at least post-uni before starting anything or joining a startup or whatever it might be. I think at that stage, I mean, it definitely was beyond my close friends because I spent 3 hours blocking everyone I knew on my fitness account because it was so embarrassing, or as I thought at the time. So it was more the fact that it was just fun to be able to see those numbers growing and see people kind of interacting, and because it was so unfiltered and so just there and then that I'd post, it was kind of just other people doing the exact same thing that would follow along. So that was what was so cool about it, was the fact that there were a lot of other people who had a similar amount of followers who were just tracking their fitness journeys too. But I'd never thought, even at that stage, because kind of, as I said, the main influencers were models and celebrities and actresses and musicians, people who were famous in their own right rather than just on social media. That was what I saw as influencing. I don't think I even knew in the slightest about the influencer world at that point.
And then in terms of timeline, you launched your own fitness guides, but did you have a brand collaboration? Was the first sort of business side of it a brand collaboration, or was it launching your own products?
So I'd actually say before my fitness guides, about a year before or a year and a half before, I actually released some recipe ebooks, which were literally just a collection of about 50 sweet and savoury recipes called Eat My Instagram, that was just things that I'd post about, kind of healthy versions of unhealthy recipes that I'd really like to make because I had a very sweet tooth and I really enjoyed making things like that. And I just sold them for £5 a pop. And that was the year before.
Did they do well? Were you surprised at the...
Like, they sold a few hundred. Which was fantastic. Yeah. And it was more the fact that...
And how old were you then when...
I must have been about 18. And just thought, well, people really like the recipes. And I was writing them all down because I'd share these things and not necessarily share the recipes, not out of any reason, just because I wouldn't write them down. I'd more just be like, look at this chocolate monk cake I created. It was delicious. And then people would be like, recipe, recipe. And so I was going to write all of them down. And I was like, actually, why don't I get my friend who was studying graphic design at the time to make them into something that looks nice and looked like an Instagram page that you could then have the recipe there, and people really enjoyed them. And then about a year after, I decided to launch the fitness guides based on the fact that it was kind of a similar thing. It was out of the idea. It's hard to say whether I would have started it just when no one was asking, which I think is obviously where the real kind of business comes in, making people want to ask. But actually for me, it was more just the fact that people were asking for my workouts.
Supply and demand.
So I just wrote them down and was like, here they are. Buy them if you like. Let's all start this together on the 6th of January or whatever it would have been.
And so that predates any brand collaboration that you had done?
So actually, I think for about 6 months before, I was doing small brand collaborations, but...
And how did they work? Were you being sort of approached through your DMs or...
It was a mixture. So I'd approach a lot of people through Instagram DMs saying, even what's funny, I feel, is that I was at that stage probably about on 100,000 followers. And even at that point, you couldn't even persuade companies to gift you anything, even for a post. I feel like it was just a completely different world, maybe even just for micro-influencers, or that's not even a micro-influencer, but kind of the idea that we still had to persuade brands that influencer marketing worked. And so I DM a lot of brands when I saw their stuff and I couldn't afford it and just wanted, you know, some leggings or whatever it would be, and kind of would say, hey, like, I can give you 3 posts for this one sock. Is that okay? And then it would usually just be no. And so, but then more and more things started coming up. It would kind of be a shoot here and there for £50 to £100. It would kind of be that type of thing. I had one sponsorship also because I just started uni, and at Oxford you're not allowed a job. So I took a year out to work before uni. So
you're not allowed to have a job?
No, because it's so intense. Mm. So yes, obviously there are problems with that. But the holidays are about 1.5 to 3 months long. So the idea is that you're meant to be able to have a job during the holidays. But I actually took a year out before uni to earn money and worked at IBM and earned the money, saved up. But then I was kind of quickly realising that actually I didn't know if I did have enough money to kind of pay myself through. So I started looking for a lot more. At this stage, it was very much like because I needed the money. And so kind of looking more at a lot of brand collaborations, which I think isn't talked about as much now. Obviously, I would never have represented any kind of, you know, skinny tea or whatever it might be that I didn't stand for. But actually, I was also very much in need of some money. So I was very open to the idea of collaborating on certain brands. And I don't think there's, as long as you're not going against your morals, I don't actually think there's any shame in that and kind of hustling and trying to make the bit of money you need.
Yeah.
And for me, that was my job that I was able to do alongside uni that wouldn't actually be technically not allowed because I was just doing it as a normal person would do their social media.
So looking back at the collaborations that you did do and in that sort of hustling period, there aren't any that are sort of off-brand for you?
I wouldn't say any were completely off-brand. I'd say there are some that I'd probably look at now and just say, oh, I wouldn't necessarily jump at that just because now especially I'm particularly selective because I have my own businesses. I'm very concerned in terms of ethics and sustainability, but more just things that I'd be like, yeah, I love your product and I use it, so great, let's go ahead. Whereas now, even if I love someone's product and I use it, I don't necessarily work with them because it might not just be the right match in terms of the content they want to produce.
Had you built out a community of contemporary sort of influencers at that time?
In terms of
sort of like friendships, friends, and so being able to value yourself and like work out how much you should be paying and charging, because I suppose that predates you having management.
Yeah, actually at this point I did have my first management, and it was kind of the idea that I was seeing a lot of people getting lots of jobs. It was probably because my content was absolutely awful, but I was seeing a lot of people getting a lot of jobs and I needed that too. And so I was kind of like, I need this help from you. And
so then, did you approach management in the...
Yes, yeah. I did. And that's how I got my first management. I had a meeting, sat down, discussed what I wanted, and then went into that and met other people through them too, which was really great because I felt like I had other people that I could talk to about the same thing.
Was that management Gleam or that was a separate?
No, it was a separate management. And I was kind of even surprised then when they say, like, I know there was someone that had 500,000 followers and they were saying, yeah, like a company will pay £150 to do something, and I was like, wow, like that is amazing. Which obviously now the rates are completely different and the reality of it is beyond what people could ever have imagined even back then, even the people who were doing that as a job. But yeah, I feel like it's changed completely. But it was definitely, I did reach out to a lot of people being like, hey, help.
When you launched your fitness guys, is that year one of university?
Yeah, that was my first year of university in Christmas.
And is that when it blew up your own products and you realised that that was probably a better revenue earner than brand collaborations?
Absolutely. So my business partner, who I work with now on BND, I was already writing and releasing these guides, and he kind of came along and said, hey, we'd love to also put them on an app for you, where you can essentially just use the guides as they are on the app and we'll just load them on. So it basically has another feature for people to be able to use.
Was he at university with you as well?
No. And so we went from there, and kind of his idea was always the fact that influencers should be starting their own brands rather than brand collaborations or kind of in tandem with brand collaborations. And so we yeah, we worked together on that. The guide sold so well. I think they sold in bits and bobs at the beginning, and then they just absolutely, I think when people started realizing that they were really good and they enjoyed them and they liked the style of training, then they started really, I think within a few days we'd sold like 1,000, which was enormous, especially considering I had like 140k or something at the time.
Did you get excited about looking at the back end and seeing the orders come in?
So excited, I think, especially because I'd just been suspended for not being able to pay my fees from university.
Oh, wow.
Because my student finance didn't go through. So I kind of got this email and I was like, right, it's time to release the guides. And we released the guides and the student finance came through and it was all just a very happy, happy day.
Did you find that that was a key motivator, being sort of financially stressed, to really push yourself to do that?
I feel like for the first term of university, I was very much just as anyone else would be, but I feel like because I'd worked for a year before full-time on what was, I guess, like a grad starter salary for a lot of jobs, I was really, really excited to have this money saved up, and then I just realised how expensive life is, especially Oxford's a very expensive city, and yeah, I just realised that I needed to keep a stream of income kind of however I could. And obviously this was really exciting to find out that there was something that could do that, that didn't necessarily mean I had to rely on brand collaborations and working with people.
Yeah. And then from the fitness guides, you then released your fitness sort of resistance bands as
well. So that was almost a year later.
Yeah.
So the guides did really well. I released about, I think, three at that point, two. Essentially, I always used resistance bands. I always use the rubber ones. And then I remember once using some fabric ones and being like, oh my God, this is incredible. Why have I ever used the rubber ones? I don't understand why people would use these when you can also get this. And then I looked online and they were £40. And I was like, ah, I see now why people don't. And so we looked into it and we kind of looked into the idea of producing them myself. And we realized they don't cost anywhere near as much as that to produce, even if you produce them ethically.
And at that time then, were you already morally aware of like sustainability and wanting to ethically produce things?
I think even though it's a huge buzzword now, everyone's been aware of sweatshops and that type of thing for a very long time, whether people want to admit it or not. And it was kind of, no one wants to, especially if you're directly doing it and you're directly manufacturing and producing and selling. So
And your business partner was supportive of that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I've always been very clear in terms of my ethics and my morals and how I want to do things. It's definitely developed over time, and we've been able to kind of constantly adapt and evolve within the companies to be able to become more and more sustainable and ethical from the starting point. But yeah, so we looked into that and we decided to go for it. We decided to sell them for £14 with a free guide included, with essentially up to 8 months worth of workouts depending on how you use them, basically completely based on the bands, but then also some workouts without your bands if you forgot them. So it was kind of meant to be a loyalty, this is why you should buy this. And they did well on our launch day. I think we had about 150, 200 bands. And we actually had an absolutely hellish launch day for obviously a good reason.
Yeah.
But we accidentally sold 5 times our stock because there was a problem with the back end, completely our fault. And we essentially said, look, we're going into production anyway, so we'll get these to you within the month. But obviously not what people want to hear when they've ordered something that they think is going to get to them in a few weeks. So, and that was kind of a first experience into that.
Customer service.
There were thousands and thousands and thousands of people who wanted the bands. And we kind of thought at that point, whether accidentally or not, it was never the point that I sat down and I was like, do you know what we should do? We should do affordable, vegan, ethical resistance bands that aren't priced £40. It wasn't that ever happened. It was kind of putting two and two together and then coming out with this and being like, it seems like we've identified a gap in the market because everyone wants these and now everyone produces them. So the idea was definitely a great one, and it really helped to get this kind of brand off the ground. We also did vegan leather barbell pads at the same time because a lot of the barbell pads were either leather or just foam and would give you bruises.
And did you use the revenue that you'd got from the fitness courses then to invest back in at that stage?
So my deal with my business partner was that I didn't foot any of the bills because that was the way we were able to do it, which is really one of the huge benefits of having a platform, because you kind of guarantee you're going to sell a certain amount.
So did it just a revenue share on profit?
Exactly, which has been my preferred way of working, because the brands have done so well, there's kind of this proof there that your costs are going to be covered, but I can't be footing £2 million mm. worth of stock. I just can't in any yeah. way, shape or form. And we like to reinvest as much as possible and everything like that. So it meant that I've been very lucky in that I haven't had mm. to specifically do that, which is one of the huge issues people have in terms of startups and everything. And that's why, although, yes, we've worked incredibly hard and these businesses have grown more than we could ever have imagined and everyone has worked day and night to make that happen, there is also a huge leg up you get from having a platform and being able to start your company with an existing audience and also an existing, not just audience, but also often fan base who want to support you regardless of what you're doing.
Yeah. Did your business partner find you or did you find your business partner?
He found me.
Yeah. Is there a sort of a key stat that you've got with your like bands that, or a key stat in your business that you're most proud of?
We have lots, which yeah. is good.
Run me through some key stats.
So with BND, for the past year or so, we've been selling out about 30,000 units every 2 weeks, which is
phenomenal.
Phenomenal. And that was even before our kind of rebrand, which moved it away from my name, for people who might not be familiar with the brand. It moved it away from my name to a brand in itself, which there were a lot of reasons for, but kind of mainly the idea that they were fantastic products and we were creating loads of different ranges of amazing products, but they would always be linked to my following. And then all these other people had started producing the same products because they'd seen how well ours had done, and they essentially then just, obviously if you're recommended something and it has someone's big fat name on it, yeah. you're likely to go and buy another brand, or you know, in terms of trying to get into stockists, all of these things, it just, yeah, it definitely had an effect.
Did you find it sort of flattering or frustrating when you saw people emulating your work?
I think you'd be foolish to think that it's not going to happen in any industry. I think it happens in every single industry. I mean, look at the activewear industry. If you scroll down your Instagram feed, you'll probably see about 10 different brands producing the exact same thing. But what we try and do is we try and constantly innovate in terms of even small things like colorways. We like to bring out products that are going to make you feel good and feel like you can express yourself through things such as even small things that like gym accessories or equipment that make you feel more confident, whether it's at home or in the gym. And that's something that's really important to us. So whether it's a new product or a new colorway or a new version of something, it's so important for us to never stand still and
evolve or die.
Exactly. And actually what we found is that as long as you are constantly innovating and as long as you are constantly kind of in on the fact that whatever you were doing last month isn't good enough this month, not in a kind of mean way, but in a way that you actually need to make some progress, we've been able to stay up there in the market. We know that we always want to make things accessible in terms of price. We never just think we're the only brand offering something. So we just try and really make it something that has a user experience involved too, a kind of brand loyalty aspect where we do really care about our customers, no matter kind of where they come from, whether it was from me, whether it was from recommendations, whatever it would have been. So we try and make it a really great brand to be involved in and to be a customer of.
In terms of rebranding so that it's a separate entity and not you, I mean, I can see why that is important. Often, you know, businesses that aren't reliant on a personality are actually of a greater value because anyone can take over. But did you find short term that led to a decline in sales, or what's the balance there?
Our BND launch when we rebranded was the most successful we'd ever had by about double.
Wow.
So I think there definitely is that aspect, and I think there will be a number of customers who stopped buying from us for whatever reason or decided to support someone else's kind of merch. But that was the thing, it was merch because it had my name on, because it was directly correlated with what I like. So I maybe use a barbell pad, but I don't use a lifting belt. Does that mean we can't sell lifting belts because it's inauthentic?
Mm.
All of these things that came into it, that actually you often have to lose a tiny bit of your customer base to actually be able to expand beyond and be more accessible and be more kind of just something that represents more people rather than just my style of training, just my preferences. And we wanted to, you know, we have a really great thing going and we wanted to be able to provide things for as many people as possible.
Don't want to sound sycophantic, but you're obviously at university, you've got two businesses on the go. It's a Harvard University that you're at. How did you balance that? And when and how do you actually unwind and relax? And what impact has running businesses sort of had on your mental health?
Yeah, of course. I think that's something we really, really need to bear in mind. I definitely need to bear it in mind more. I think
anyone who knows me, my manager is probably sitting out there going absolutely crazy, because yes, I'm not very good at the resting part of the work and rest situation, but also I very, very much like being busy, and I'm very lucky to be able to work in what I'm passionate about and to be able to, I think the thing is that I get a lot of questions kind of saying like, how is your work ethic like this? And I got into the university of my dreams that I wanted to be at forever. And I was able to study something I loved. And I was also be able to start two businesses that stood for things that I absolutely loved. And I'm able to draw a design and see it 3 months down the line in the flesh. And I'm able to sell that to people who support me because they want to support me. And I think all of those things, it's slightly different from the idea that I get a lot of kind of comments saying, you know, how on earth do you do this? You have more hours in the day than everyone. Like, it's absolutely crazy. But actually, I think I've been so incredibly lucky that you cannot discount the fact that from day to day, I'm doing what I love for reasons I love, being able to make a good amount of money, being able to support causes I want to support because of that.
Which and sometimes mean that times goes so much faster because it doesn't really...
Yeah.
When you're doing something you absolutely love, it doesn't feel like work, even though it is work.
Absolutely. From day to day, I essentially have the... I don't have a huge amount of flexibility because with businesses do come responsibilities, but I do have the kind of huge, huge luxury of being able to decide where that goes, how I do that, and the people who are around me. And even things like the hours I work, I do decide to work a lot of them, but that's directly correlating to the amount of money I earn, the amount of recognition I get, the amount of things I'm able to change in terms of sustainability and ethics within the industry. And all of those things cannot be discounted in terms of the amount they bring to your motivation on a daily basis, whether it's straight up motivation or habit or whatever it is. I'd say one of the most important things for me that I realized last summer, pretty late realization, but was that weekends are great. And I haven't quite caught on to it yet, but I do at least try and get one day of weekend. It's usually a Sunday where I'm actually not working at all. And the most work I'll do is just write my week in my from my digital calendar to my written down calendar on the Sunday night. And that's more therapeutic for me. So I know kind of what I've got for the week. But yeah, that's one of the biggest things. And I would say to everyone that you must have a weekend, because no matter how much you want to work, no matter how much you love your job, you will not realise how much it affects your mental health.
Yeah.
And also your energy levels and the amount you bring to the job. It's actually just unproductive to be working 7 days a week, 24/7, which I'm good at not taking the advice on, but I'd give that advice to everyone else.
I definitely agree with that. I think on my bio on the website, it was like, we have sort of most likely two, and mine's like, be found at the office at weekends. But
yeah,
in the last sort of 2 years, I was like, actually, this is just not sustainable, and I'm no good to anybody if I'm just really exhausted and can't get sort of...
But I also feel like at the moment, so we've got a really big product release next week, and I'm about to go to the US for a month for work with some huge releases out there. And so I've been kind of completely swamped, because not only am I about to leave for a month, but we also have a big release. And so it's kind of ended up that I have been working nonstop since I got back. I was away for a while. And so I feel like for me, I just need to understand that that cannot be, like, we will have releases every month. And that cannot be my every month and my every day. It doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't bring a lot to the business other than my kind of exhaustion. Even if the work's getting done, if that much work needs to be done, then more delegation also needs to be done and more people need to come on board.
What is your focus in terms of your businesses now? Is it predominantly on Tala? We haven't actually spoken about the beginnings of that. Like, where did that concept and idea come from? It's a natural fit, seeing as you've been in that fitness space, but to launch your own brand.
So I've really enjoyed activewear for a very long time. And I think for me, I knew that I wanted to do some sort of activewear brand or a kind of like athleisure crossover. I like being able to express myself and my style whilst also in the gym, but also being trying to feel good and not having random cutouts here and there that you're like, why on earth is this here? And the idea for me was that I wanted to do something like that. And then over the year and a half that I started conceptualizing it, obviously I started becoming more and more interested in sustainability and ethics and the idea that actually there is no place for fast fashion anymore, whether it's still being purchased or not. It's
just completely wrong. And I kind of started realizing that, and then just feeling like even if I had some amazing thing going with amazing profit margins and all of this, that wasn't going to be launched like that, and I would absolutely do it ethically and sustainably. And that's when the idea developed that actually, if you want to buy sustainable activewear, I'd go online. And there are some good price points now. Either they then don't disclose how sustainable they are, so it's kind of made with rather than this percent, or they are £100 for a pair of leggings. And so the idea was that actually I wanted to make a product where there would be absolutely no reason to buy from the company down the road, because this company is well priced, it's sustainable, it's good quality, it's high performance, it's affordable, but without compromising the people who are actually making the clothing, all of that. And I didn't feel like that was completely filled, even if it was filled in parts. And also, if you look at the fast fashion industry, one of the reasons why people still shop there is because the amount of choice. So there's not, like, I want all sustainable brands out there to do really well, even if they're kind of our direct competition, as it were. I believe that we're best off being able to champion each other and give each other the space to be able to create this idea of choice, and then people will kind of be able to switch over. And I feel like for me, even now, I'll go online trying to find something sustainable and ethical, and actually, if I want something in the style I want it in, I'll have to end up going to a charity shop or Depop, which is the most sustainable thing to do, buying secondhand or not buying at all. But there needs to be a bridge there for people who want to be buying new clothes and they want to be ahead of the trends and they want to be fashion blogging or whatever it might be, and want to still be able to represent themselves whilst being sustainable and ethical and not spend £200 on a piece of clothing.
Do you think there still is still a lot of education though, around, because people are used to Primark prices for mm-hmm. leggings, that they think when they see something expensive being like, oh, that person is just making loads more money, and that's actually just not the case?
Well, absolutely. I think the thing is with us is we did a lot of market research into how much things were across both sustainable and non-sustainable brands. We didn't want to just be a good price for a sustainable brand. We wanted to be a good price full stop. But we also didn't want to compromise the quality, because if you buy a pair of leggings from us and it's £35, £40, it's going to last you and it's sustainable and ethical. So the idea that actually I did get a few people kind of saying like, oh, I'd love to purchase from you, but £35 to £40 for a pair of leggings, like I can't afford that, or £25 for a sports bra or £20 for a vest, whatever it would be. Not only are other activewear companies pricing themselves at exactly that price point because they're becoming so popular and kind of at this kind of trendy forefront of activewear, they're also not sustainable and ethical, and they're also probably producing for about £1 for that exact item. We're not. If we're selling at £35, we're likely getting it produced for about £25, and then we need to also be able to pay our staff, we need to be able to market, we need to be able to play in a game that's actually made for fast fashion when we're slow fashion. All of these things that, trust me, like, we've thought everything through. And I think it's, you shouldn't need to buy 10 pairs of leggings a month, you shouldn't need to buy a pair of leggings even every month or every 2 months, but the idea is still there that everything should be £5, £6, £14, when first of all, you're really compromising someone else's quality of life, but also you're compromising the environment, you're compromising the quality, because you're going to wear it once, if that, and it's not really worth it. So the idea for us was to create something that's so good and so on trend and fun and innovative, and that will make you feel good and make you look good and be accessible and inclusive, that actually, even if you're not interested in sustainability or ethics, which you should be, but even if you're not, you want to buy our clothes and you're accident, like, we want to be so good that we force people into accidentally being sustainable. And we've actually had a lot of progress in that way, and a lot of people who kind of in their next post will be posting about a fast fashion brand.
Yeah.
We've accidentally tricked them into being sustainable and ethical, which is fantastic. And hopefully down the line through following us, we can also help to increase that awareness around it. Because I know for me, for example, it took me probably about a year or even a year and a half to kind of know a lot about fast fashion and actually stop buying it. And that's, I'd say, still only happened recently. And that's awful, but it's kind of the world we're in, and I felt like the job I was in allowed me to do that. And I've been able to realize now, especially through my own experiences of actually having one of those brands, how, no, it's not easy at all, but it is absolutely not impossible. In fact, it is very, very, very possible for all of these brands to be changing, and they just don't care. They care about the money more. So
You've moved away, obviously, from having your name. It's not Grace Beverly and Tala. Would you ever consider doing a collaboration with your brand with another influencer? And if so, why or why not?
Yes. I feel like you should wait a month.
Oh, right. So working with another influencer, obviously, you see great success and would want to do that. What is the appeal and why do you think brands are doing that more and more?
Obviously, you get the audience. It's the same reason why influencers are starting brands. You have a kind of guaranteed pack of cheerleaders, which is incredible, and people who want to support someone but also have essentially that person's billboard on their screen every day or every few days. And obviously I feel like it's completely understandable for both my brand and other brands to work with influencers, because not only can it tap into their individual style and actually open up other areas of a market that you might not have even thought about, it also gives you access to different audiences, especially with us, for example. We don't want to just shame people for buying fast fashion, for example, at Tala. We want to be able to encourage people to buy at Tala or other sustainable brands. And part of that involves not just, for example, gifting to sustainable influencers and actually trying to reach an audience. Otherwise, you just block out, through shame, half of the people out there, or way more than half the people out there, 99% of the people out there. You'll never access them, and also it will never be inviting to them. I think one of the reasons that made me kind of change was the idea that, okay, well, if I really need something, for whatever reason it might be, I can have it and I can buy it and I can support that.
I mean, people are much more likely to listen when you're explaining something rather than shouting. And I think that's so often with social media, if something rubs someone up the wrong way and they just shout, it's like, I'm not going to listen to you when you're just speaking in caps. I wouldn't, if you stopped me in the street and just started shouting at me, I'm not going to listen either.
I think one of the big things too is that it's kind of the same as something like veganism, where you look at it and you say, well, I could never do all of that, so I'm not going to do any of it. And the idea should be, rather than this policing, it should be, okay, well, how about if you love cheeseburgers, you have a cheeseburger when you want to. Everything else that you say you can do vegan, you do that. Or whether it's chicken nuggets or whether it's fast fashion. When you really want it, you can have it. That does not discount all of the rest of the help you're doing. That's the same as, you know,
can't just be this all or nothing attitude.
Exactly. And I think acceptance within the kind of sustainable and ethical world or community or whatever is so important, because as soon as you get preachy, even though, like, I believe in these things so much, and sometimes I get so angry and I just kind of want to shout, like, what on earth are you doing buying fast fashion? It makes no sense. Like, people are literally dying and you don't care. But actually, it makes people just want to hide. Yeah. And it makes people just want to not acknowledge what they're doing, because everyone has this kind of cognitive dissonance that they actually know that it's bad, but either they want to still be able to buy that much and they don't obviously have enough to buy from some of these more expensive sustainable brands, whatever it might be. And I think the best thing to do, and the best thing that I think I've done over the past few months, is just having more, kind of sharing more resources and sharing more brands and people that are doing things well that can actually spread that information, rather than saying, stop doing this, and say, do more of this. One little easy swap you can do is this, and you will hugely help. And people also like to feel good, and they like to feel good about themselves, and they like to feel like they're doing something good. So if you offer them something that actually is easy and can really change someone else's life through them doing one little thing differently, it makes people feel happy, and shouting at people does not make them feel happy. So that's kind of our ethos. We want to be a brand that is open to anyone, but will hopefully, through your process of following us and following me, be able to kind of encourage people to make that change.
How much negativity would you say gets thrown at you online? And I would say, from like following, that you are unafraid to share an opinion online. Is that, I'm not saying that you're going online and shouting, but there was a tweet recently, it was like, stop coming at me for not being relatable anymore because I'm doing really well. What kind of example is that to set? What are your rules and gauge on what you share and what you don't share?
I think the older I've gotten and the more into my, I guess, social media career, I've shared less and less. And that is partly due to the nature of the community, and partly due to the fact that, for example, if an influencer who often buys fast fashion talks about the fact that they want to be more sustainable or they love this vegan brand, then from that point onwards, every time they post about something that's not in line with that, they will get absolutely slated, and therefore they are never going to show sustainable and ethical things, even though they want to change, because they're so terrified of it that the change isn't made there. what help does that bring? I think just in general, for my peace of mind, my mental health, my job from day to day, I know I'm a good person. I know I'm doing good things. I'm really trying. And my whole ethos is that you don't need to check me because I check myself way more than you check me. So I think the idea of the fact that I might post something and then in my DMs, someone will be going, rah, 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 like, you need to do this. Like, I can't believe you've done this. Trust me, I think about everything I do before I do it, because whether you want to believe it or not, I'm a good and conscious person and I will make those decisions for myself.
Do you think chastising on social media just has got too much now?
I think there's definitely a conversation to be had about internet trolling and just mindless commenting, even if it's not something you would see as an like lots of people say, you know, it wasn't an insult, it wasn't me bullying anyone, it's just my opinion. And imagine if you just went up to someone and said, you look ugly today. And it's like, it's just my opinion. Or not even something as strong as that, kind of saying like, I think you've changed. How much would that
Very
hurt
common,
you?
Yeah.
And yet, of course, we need to check people. Of course, people need to be doing better. But I get messages saying, why haven't you posted about this that happened a few days ago and this? I thought you liked to talk about these things. And it's kind of like, well, actually, I've been either having my own crisis, or I've decided to take some time off social media, or I decided just not to post it because when I post something like that, you know, it really affects my mental health because of the response I get. Whatever it might be, whatever reason anyone has, it's a valid reason. And I think this whole culture of calling people out when there are very valid reasons to call people out, but there are also call outs that just don't need to happen or can be done in private, or actually, if it's not your friend, you know, they're probably being told the same by their friends. So you can sit back, relax and enjoy the show. Also, in terms of that relatability thing, that actually was about another influencer that I saw being kind of slated for the fact that people didn't find them relatable anymore. And they used to watch their videos because they found them relatable. And now they're just essentially, translation, they're doing really well. And it's really hard to watch now because before it was like we were all on the struggle bus together and now they're doing well. And it's kind of the idea that I think the more I've grown up, the more I've realised that if you're criticising someone for not being relatable, you're essentially saying, why can't you stick at my level? Because for whatever reason, whether it's money, whether it's ethics, whether it's career, any of these things, and I know it's kind of a controversial thing to say because it's kind of like, don't hate me because you ain't me. But actually, no one was put on this earth to give you content or to give you something to feel good about. And if you don't feel good about someone and you don't like their content, unfollow them, remove them from your lives, and they can adapt. And I know, for example, I'll have a huge crossover in terms of my content now, in terms of the people who are staying and who are going and new people who are coming and all of that. I'd rather people do that, and I'd rather people stay if they like my content and leave if they don't like it, and new people come if they do and all of that. And I think the idea that people are, because their lives are online, they, of course, in certain ways, you owe your audience a lot. I know for sure that I owe my audience kind of more than I could ever say, but that doesn't mean I owe them about my personal life. It doesn't mean I owe them about this. It's kind of,
and doesn't mean that you haven't worked incredibly hard to get where you are as well.
Exactly, but also the fact that everyone deserves their own peace and everyone deserves their own decisions, and getting at someone because they're not exactly who you wanted them to be for the 5 minutes you see them online a day is just a completely, in my opinion, incorrect, immature, and just static mindset,
yeah,
which is quite selfish, in my opinion. But I think that's one of the conversations to be had in general about social media, because no one should be following anyone that makes them feel bad. But it's also not anyone's duty to make you feel good, as long as they're not slating you directly. Their lives should not make you feel bad. And if they do, remove their lives from your lives so you can feel better. But don't try and change their lives to make you feel better, because that's not what they're here on this earth for.
I think what you're known for is how open and candid you are about the success of your businesses online. How important is that to you? I know that you did the video about how you bought a house at 22 in London, and to inspire people and empower women. And so often, I mean, in British culture, we're all notoriously self-deprecating anyway, but to let women know that they can run their own businesses and be powerhouses as well. Is that something that's...
Well, I think what's funny is that now every time people bring this type of thing up to me, I completely cringe and I go like, oh God, no, I like didn't mean it like that. And I didn't mean to say like,
oh, but I did this and I've done this and I've done this and
it
you
didn't
can
come
do
across
it too.
Like that though in the video.
Of course, but I think this is one of the whole problems is that I can sit here and cringe about it, and yet that is what I so want people to be able to do. And I feel like for so long, even when, for example, just like the guides were doing really well and I was making a good amount of money and I was able to save and I was able to contribute to things I'd always wanted to contribute to, and I felt like I had to hide that, which is such a, like, boo-hoo, play the violins, you know, really sad for me. But it's kind of the idea that actually as a woman, as a young woman, and I feel like generally a woman of any age and generally being British or, like, anything in between any of these categories, you're taught to be humble in a way that is deprecating to your success, because if you shout about your work, you're going to get more work and you're going to get more recognition and you're going to get awards. And people are out there doing that. And I think people, especially within the influencer world, people often see men with cars and houses and they're like, oh my God, that's so cool. Like, you've been able to do this. Like, they've absolutely smashed it. And then they see women with cars and houses and it's like, I just don't understand why they're showing off considering the fact that they made all their money from posting photos of themselves on the internet. And it's like, think about what you're saying, because I know that even I have this internalized view of someone when I see them showing off things they've done. And actually, who am I to, and I really have to check myself still.
It's not unconscious when, bias.
Yeah, when I'm yelling from the rooftops, like, actually, I'm doing really well and I've got two very successful businesses and it's really exciting. But then I kind of, when I hear that back, I'm like, oh God, that sounds horrible. Like, just because I've been taught, and I feel like all of us have been taught to sit down, to be quiet and to let people discover that on their own, which is fine. But
it's like the more successful you become, the less likable you feel.
Exactly. And I feel like it often makes me then come across as a brat or like boasting or whatever it would be. And I feel like actually that's one of the things that I need to improve within myself, because...
And we need role models like that in the industry to stand up and say.
And also just say, like, I feel like for so long I was kind of watching the industry and then started being paid the amounts that some people were being paid and was kind of like, oh my God, you would never know these people are being paid this much or doing this or getting these kind of jobs or getting this much free. Actually, like just this morning, I was posting everything from my PO box on my stories, and I make a point of doing that because I now know as a business owner how hard it is to get your business out there. And especially with sustainable and ethical products, it does not cost anywhere near nothing to send something to an influencer. And the lack of courtesy in even just a private message saying thank you to the brand or posting on your stories, even though you would usually charge a few thousand pounds for that, whatever it might be, the kind of idea that actually then I get loads of DMs saying, we get it, you're gifted stuff. And well, actually, I feel like even though, yeah, I could charge for this or I could do this or whatever, I want to support the brands I want to support. And if someone sends me something, just like if someone gives you a Christmas present, you should say thank you, even though it's beneficial for their brand to see you wearing it or whatever it is. There's a kind of common courtesy that I feel like is often forgotten. And then the people who do post about it and who do say, you know, thank you or I'm doing well or whatever, it magnifies the idea that people are boasting or people are just so obsessed with their own success or material things or whatever it might be. And I think we can all do ourselves a favour in talking about our success, and actually even if it's just to yourself from time to time because you're not ready to say it, I think it's so important. And I for one need to get a lot better at it, because I'll sit here all day saying women need to talk about their success and people in general need to talk about their success, and then someone will ask me in an interview like, so tell me about this, and I'll be like, so yeah, like we've kind of done well, yeah, it's like cool, but actually we need to be our own champions of our success.
With the space in the future, you've got Tala and your own brands. What do you want to achieve in the next year with that? And what would you also like to see on the social media sphere happen for the next year?
I think with Tala and BND, I feel like looking at the next year, you've obviously planned most of your next year anyway. So it's like, I'd kind of like all of these things to happen according to plan. But obviously, for example, Tala's not even half a year old. BND from its rebrand isn't even half a year old. The idea is that they can really blossom as their own brands, and also just internally within operations, we can all find our roles and we can all find our how the company structure works best. All of these things that actually come from a startup that often aren't translated online, the kind of back end of it.
Would you like to do some fundraising with it as well? Or
Definitely down the line, I'd look into investment. We're very lucky to be self-sufficient at the moment. And I also want to be conscious about giving away equity and
fundraising the right way.
From the right people that don't
want
you to make
better margins. From the right people, and also in terms of, yes, in terms of ethics and sustainability and all of that. And I think we're really lucky to be able to run as we do at the moment. And I feel like in the social media sphere, I'd love to see more influencers talking about sustainability and ethics, even though you're going to get shouted at. You are helping, and the amount of people a day who might message saying, hey, like, I never really thought about fast fashion, even though I'd watched this and I'd watched this and I'd watched this, but seeing how you implement the lack of it in your daily life and still are able to wear nice outfits, she says in a black tracksuit, and, you know, do everything you might want to do has, you know, really helped me. And even just the acknowledgement of that and kind of putting yourself out there, I'd really like to see more influencers doing that. I'd also like to see more influencers doing that within their own companies, just because actually it's not that hard. It will decrease your profit margins, but there are people out there that are the reason why your profit margins are higher. And trust me, those people need that profit more than you. And so I'd definitely like to see a lot more of that.
What would you like to see of from brands and their work with influencers?
I think it's quite tough because I think so much of the influencer industry has been based around fast fashion. I know when I stopped working with fast fashion brands or even buying fast fashion or kind of even before that, I probably lost about half of my income from affiliate links, from brand deals, from whatever it might be. I lost a huge amount of my income, and that was a big decision to be making. And it kind of happened in dribs and drabs, and it was terrifying, but I kind of didn't even realise it was happening, just being like, no, I won't do this, and no, I won't do that. I'm obviously lucky to have been able to start these businesses at this time too, so it means that rather than just sitting back and being like, ah, interesting, I've had to take out this much of my revenue, I've kind of been like, right, well, why don't I create something that counteracts that, not just for me, but in terms of the industry, that we can also do sponsor posts with influencers when we're big enough and when we have enough money and all of that. I think with brands and they're working with influencers, I'd like to see less greenwashing, please. It's great to see people caring about sustainability, but when you say you've got a recycled line and that's fantastic and influencers can work with you and shout about it, that's great, but you will never be sustainable until you're ethical, because if you're ethical, there is no way you'd be able to produce as much as you produce, which is what is the most detrimental to both the people and the planet. And I'd like to see more initiatives that are genuinely, whether intention-based or not, actually making a difference rather than just trying to increase your marketability because you're using keywords about sustainability. So kind of, I guess, still under the greenwashing kind of
less tokenism
umbrella. Yeah, just the kind of idea that whether it is diversity or sustainability or ethics, actually do something that is actually doing something rather than just doing something that you can put a word on it and make people feel good. Like, I just saw a campaign that was about women empowerment from a fast fashion company. It's like, what about the 250 million women, 18 to 24 year olds, who are working worldwide on producing your clothes for about $4 a day? What about, like, where do they come into your women empowerment? Because it sounds like you only care about empowering women with followers who look a certain way, who live a certain lifestyle, who earn a certain amount of money.
The lifespan of those brands, and particularly looking at the data of the next generation of Gen Z, is the accountability for brands is much higher, and people really do their due diligence on brands and what's happening. So yeah, it's not even a case of, it's literally you're going to have to future-proof yourself by doing it properly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, which is so great. I mean, I know also, I think there are obviously questions we need to talk about in terms of jobs, in terms of accessibility of clothing. There are so many questions, and there are lots of people who actually talk about these and provide a lot more valid answers than mine. And you can find them if you just do a simple Google search, which I think is what a lot of people don't do because they don't want to feel a certain way about their consumer habits. But I feel like it is great that people are putting pressure on for brands to change. And I think I'd encourage any brand to change, even if it's just a tiny bit, because we're seeing a lot of brands trying to change in terms of their marketing and how they put it across. And as soon as you do something that's actually genuinely going to change things, for example, Adidas has obviously just announced that they're going to be using completely sustainable materials by 2042 or something like that. I don't actually know the specific stats, so that might be completely wrong, but it's something along those lines. And things like that actually are commitments to even essentially just
decreasing your profit margins, which might increase your profit anyway because of your marketability now that you're being sustainable and ethical. But either way, things that are actually doing things rather than just saying you're doing things.
So on the whole, are you excited and positive about the route?
I'm really excited. And I think it's quite a weird situation to be in because obviously the more people become sustainable, the more people who technically become competition. And I think a lot of people have brought that up and kind of said, you know, like, how are you going to deal with that? I will deal with it by being very happy about the fact that we can be part of a bigger market, of a bigger industry where people actually think about what they're doing and who they're affecting and the planet, but mainly who they're affecting, and just, yeah, be able to consume freely without having to, if we get to a stage where people don't even need to think because they know the clothes they're buying are sustainable and ethical, that would be fantastic because then we, you know, we've just created this huge fast fashion industry that is so easy to shop in, but it's just wrong. Whereas if we can create that ease in another sustainable and ethical environment, we can create something really great. And that comes from voting with your money with these brands and talking to people and raising awareness, no matter how involved you might be. And I'm really, really excited. I think it's going to be fantastic.
A big thanks to Grace for coming on the show. You've been listening to Blogosphere, Serious Influence, with me, Alice Audley. Join us next week for a brand new episode. Until then, be sure to check out blogospheremagazine.com for more influencer industry updates. And why not invest in a subscription to our essential magazine whilst you're there?